This is something. Okay, because I'm just going to start the recorder and welcome everyone this morning to the House of the Rising Sun with Lynn and Bruce. And we meet every Saturday morning to discuss pertinent topics in A Course in Miracles. And, well, you know, you could just spend your entire life. In fact, I do. Applying the course to everything that happens in your life. And what happens is that you begin to make sense out of what seems to be so insane, not because you see it sane, but because you begin to see how it is you're doing it, how you made it yourself, and how we're, constantly making up a world and a situation that's meant to keep us out of communication. I mean, that's the whole purpose, to prevent communication, because what the ego knows and what you and I don't know through our normal thinking is that communication is the end of the ego. Once we start being able to truly communicate, then there's no... ego has no hold. There's nothing for it to hold on to, because the barriers to communication are what is holding it in place. And the barriers to communication are our concepts, notions of sin and guilt and fear. And so once, you know, you stop believing in sin, guilt, and fear, then there's no barrier. There's nothing to keep you from communicating. And, so that, you know, in turn, the ego is terrified of that, because obviously it cannot stand with that. So that's my thoughts this morning. How are you doing this morning, Bruce?
I'm good. And yourself? And I before you, well, go ahead and respond to that.
I'm great. I'm awesome today.
Oh, good. Yeah. What I was going to say is a couple of the things you said, I thought made a perfect segue to something that might be good to cover, and awaiting your confirmation, and that is, you said true communication, and then the word hold, and that actually fits beautifully with the workbook lesson that I think a lot of people might be reading today if they're doing the chronological yearly calendar approach, is lesson 128, which is, the world I see holds nothing that I want.
Yeah.
That would be a really, really cool one to talk about. And then the previous one, yesterday's, is one of my favorites as well, that there's no love but God's. And then there's a progression there. But anyway, the true communication, like you said, that's it, isn't it? Because if we are truly communicating, then we're in the realm of shared interests, and we're in the realm of how can we help each other wake up from mindlessness, and how can we truly benefit, the awareness that seems to be mired in a world that doesn't hold what we want, if we look at it honestly. Yeah.
Oh, so. Absolutely. And you know, Dove has been saying, of course, this week is Dove's birthday week.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, so his birthday, he was born in a leap year, so his birthday is either 132 or 133. This year, his birthday lesson is lesson 133. Uh-huh. And Just an aside too, there's a lot of people who use another calendar for the lessons. And,
oh, okay.
They use a calendar in which on leap year, they skip the day, February 29th. They just don't do the lesson and then just continue on. So they're like one day behind. So in case people are always wondering, how come you guys are on 128 when the rest of the world is on 127? Well, because I don't think Jesus told us at any point, do these lessons every day, except every 4 years, skip a day in February. I don't think he said that.
Well, as a very, very trivial aside, one of the things that's on my task list that I'm working with a wonderful fellow in Germany, who's helping me with the new website, the ACM.org website that I've been working on for months, and is getting closer to completion, is to make a toggle for a user setting to decide whether or not you want to skip leap day every year on the lessons for people who are doing it chronologically. So we are thinking of those things. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I don't understand. You know, Jesus wasn't taking the calendar and saying, well, you know, on this every 4 years, why don't you just skip this day and that day, you know, practice whatever. No. You know, it's really does go 365 days. And the thing that's cool about the leap year is if you do all the lessons in a row, then at the end you get to do that last amazing lesson, an extra day. I think
five,
that.
Six times, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's,
that
yeah,
is
exactly.
Just, you know, that's such a confirmation.
Yeah. It's a very forgiving system. And at the same time, it's very all inclusive.
Yes.
So it's forgiving because we need to forgive our attachment to things like time and being fussy about specifics and space and, you know, all the individualizations and personalizations. And that, but that's where he meets us at, you know, it's pitched at that level of the ego mind, which is obsessed with all those things. And
yeah.
I was thinking this morning that, you know, the one of the phrases that I think works really well from psychology, it's a fancy, you know, pair of words that that I think really apply very nicely to what the course is attempting to teach, you know, that there is no world, is cognitive dissonance. Because that's really at the heart of seeing how insane, 100% insane our ego is, and how 100% sane, but equally consistent, is the thought system of the Holy Spirit, our inner kindness teacher,
exactly.
Jesus in the course is sharing with us at every turn.
Yeah. Well, and what's so funny is that even when I was saying that about some people are on missing a day and Jesus didn't tell it, you know, Jesus was being very clear about every day, you know, what a self-righteous biatch I am.
Well, I almost whenever I think of a we-they paradigm, my mind, when it's remembering to laugh at the tiny mad idea, oftentimes we'll jump to one of my favorite skits of all time, which is from The Life of Brian, where they're in the Colosseum, and Brian is, you know, one of the outsiders from the People's Front of Judea, and then they finally, you know, begrudgingly let him into their inner circle, but then they discover a guy, you know, sitting a couple dozen yards away, and they say, "Who's that?" "Oh, that's the Judean People's Front." Not the People's Front of Judea, you know, like, and then they all yell "Splitter" at the end, you know. But anyway, but that's it. I mean, the distinctions that we make in the world, if we really look at the folly of space and time and individuality, are trivial. They're completely trivial, but we've trumped them up, pun intended, into a major battle so that we can make important things out of trivial differences. I mean, but that's just the nature of our egoic minds.
Oh, yeah. And thinking about, you know, I think we've even talked about this episode of Star Trek before, where they go to the Frank Gorshin,
yes.
And they go to the planet and the people are all half black and half white.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a big war and they're saying, "Well, I don't understand. You're both, you know, half black and half white. Why are you fighting?" "Well, their left side is black and our right side is black." You know, that they're fighting because of something that is just absolutely unnoticeable to the people who are visiting from another planet or another star system.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's it. That's what we're fighting over. You and I are a mirror. Basically what they're saying, the black and white, is that when they look in the mirror, what they see is the other.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so that early Star Trek episode presaged much of and also historically recapitulated, you know, centuries, millennia, and really almost to the beginning of time, you know, if we could go back that far, the whole dichotomy that the ego is based on. It's based on the idea that it's possible to have something other than perfect oneness, that there could be a split, that there could be a fragmentation of perfect oneness. And we have no idea the magnitude of the guilt behind that, because our unconscious minds are, by definition, unconscious. But last Sunday, I participated in two, in addition to the wrap-up of the three-part series that I did. And thank you again, Lynn, for suggesting that. That was a lot of fun. And as well as your contributions, numerous. There was a couple of sessions at the Rocky Mount Miracle Center that I attended via Skype. And one of them was a wonderful talk by Doug Sparks on our investment in mortality, basically. and the other one was a quarterly group that meets in Denver on the Lighthouse, which you can go to RockyMountainMiracleCenter.org and find that information. That is expertly facilitated. It's a group discussion on the Lighthouse articles that Ken Wapnick did. And the one that we did last Sunday was all about that. It was basically about the royal road of the mind, which is what Freud described dreams, but then what Ken Wapnick then elaborates on in that Lighthouse article is the idea that the royal road really applies not just to our nighttime nocturnal dreams as we tend to think of them, but also to our daytime dreams. This is a massive dream. If the course is worth its the paper it's written on, if the values in it mean anything, in other words, then the dream that we think ends when we wake up, in my case, about an hour ago, as we stagger around and discover, oh yeah, that's right, I have this body I need to tend to, and all that kind of stuff that typically occupies our minds through the day. That is just a continuation of the same dream, but in a different form. And we say, oh, now I'm awake. Well, literally or metaphorically, maybe not so much. Maybe when each day begins as we think of it, we just shift from one dream to another, and we're still looking at a world that we see that in truth holds nothing that we want. And that ties into the other word you said, which is a hold. And I think that's, we have this tenacious grip, and not necessarily our fingers, white knuckling a steering wheel, kind of grip, but although metaphorically that's a good, helpful image sometimes. But it's our mind's grip on the thought system and the enormous resistance that we have to letting go of a very dysfunctional, as Ken Wapnick loves to say, maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem. And so looking at what we hold and hold on to can be tremendously insightful and helpful and help us to see the humor in doing that, because we're like cartoon characters, we're like Wile E. Coyotes, like we talked about in a previous conversation, consistent and persistent efforts to try to outsmart the roadrunner and in a adversarial way, and forgetting that each time that we've tried that, it's failed miserably, and we get smashed up and beat up, but because we're eternal beings, in truth, we get an infinite number of chances to try it until we finally realize, well, this isn't getting us anywhere. We don't have to go down every single permutation and every single road to discover that. But anyway, well, I've rambled on a bit. Is there anything you want to add, Lynn, before we tackle a subject?
No, I think it's time to let's dive into this lesson.
Okay.
And,
okay.
See what's going on.
Do you want to read the first paragraph of lesson 128?
I will read the first paragraph.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. I'm just, okay. Lesson 128. The world I see holds nothing that I want. The world I see holds nothing that I want. The world you see holds nothing that you need offer to you. Okay, that is a strange phrase. And I'm just going to say it again. The world you see holds nothing that you need to offer you. nothing that you can use in any way, nor anything at all that serves to give you joy. Boy, does that ever just completely flip-flop everything that we think we know about the world. And the idea that the world you see holds nothing that I need to offer myself. I'm the one who's offering it to me.
Yeah.
can't use it in any way. Has no meaning. And does not give me joy. There's nothing in it that gives me joy. And you would say, well, that doesn't make sense because, you know, I have, you know, I love the spring, the flowers that are blooming, the birds that are singing, my little grandson when he's smiling and laughing, eating cheesecake. You know, these things bring me joy, 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 joy. And yeah, Jesus is saying, there's nothing here that gives you joy. Which says to me, well, then what the hell is joy?
Well, I'm glad you phrased it in just that way, because I think that really ties into an important principle in addition to the one that does, you know, that the course is completely and only about the mind and addressing our decision-making faculty in the mind, which really is the awareness that a lot of mystical Eastern traditions attempt to reach and to remind us of. That, you know, is really that, you know, the what is asking the question, what is doing the observing, that kind of idea. And if it's addressing the mind, then it puts it in a whole different, you know, context, all these workbook lessons in the whole course. And you know, the mind then, the decision-making faculty of the mind that really is right below the threshold of the real world that we've never left, but has enthralled us because of its choice to split up perfect oneness and believe that it happened, has made a cosmos that seems to keep us, you know, mesmerized and hypnotized to the extent that it's unimaginable. But, you know, the really is just those two choices, isn't it? There's the choice for the ego thought system of sin, guilt, fear, death, and you know, victimhood, and that whole gamut of stuff that is really the world that does hold nothing that we want, and that world, of course, is in the mind, and then the other world is the world of forgiveness, which is the Holy Spirit's curriculum, which offers everything that we want, and that this lesson is the perfect setup for the 1-2 punch that Lesson 128 and 129 provide, which suggests that, you know, beyond this world, the next lesson coming up is there is something that we want and everything that we want. But we have to look at, in order to get to that, we have to look at the barriers we put in the way first, which is the world that, as we've set it up, but in a sense it's the same world, but it's just seen differently. But it's the way it's phrased, I think, is the big clue. It's the world I see. And of course, if English was a little bit more versatile, it would have been written with the lowercase I, holds nothing that I want. And then the second I would be the decision making mind, right? Because the world that the ego sees is really one that is completely invested with confrontational, oppositional, you know, battles. It's basically a warlike, hellish existence that really is the nightmare, and then the happy dream, the alternative that's held out to us, is the same exact script, but with a different translator giving the director's cut voiceover that says, you know, you could see this differently. I could see peace instead of this. And example that comes to mind is I was in a psychology class. I think it was when I was an undergrad at University of California, Davis, and the psychology professor played this movie clip that shows a girl kind of, you know, prancing through the woods. You know, young girl, probably, you know, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, something like that. And it shows a man. Who the girl doesn't see, who basically goes from tree to tree following her, and there's two different soundtracks. There's one where there's this sort of happy-go-lucky, you know, hide-and-seek kind of music, you know, like they're having this fun game, and you know, and you know, the outcome will be laughter, kind of thing, when they meet again. And then the other exact same video is played with this sinister soundtrack. And then of course on that one you're expecting some horrific murderous outcome kind of thing, but that's exactly what, and I thought, what a great example of the difference in the worlds, because the world that I see is the lowercase I, the ego I, is that sinister film noir version of the same imagery, the same sensory data that comes into the five physical senses, but with a different teacher, it has a whole different meaning. It's completely different. It's no longer this gosh awful horror flick, but it becomes, something to gently laugh at, and it's just a gentle classroom play exercise.
Exactly. And so that this lesson is going to go on and talk about how it is that because, like you said, once you look at it in terms of it being, a joyful thing, or you have that notion about it that's a part of your thought system and your being, then you don't see the world in despair. However, not many people see it that way, and mm-hmm. so when he says that the world you see doesn't have anything that will give you joy, and you look at those things and you say, well, no, I when I see my little grandson and he's laughing and happy, that brings me joy. But when I see my little grandson, like last night, he was having like a headache, and he can't express what's wrong. It's just that the lights were hurting his eyes and he was in pain. Mm-hmm. That was not making me joyful.
Right.
He was crying in real distress. That was not making me joyful. And so what's the difference between that scenario and him sitting eating ice cream a couple hours earlier and being ecstatically happy? The difference is I'm seeing a loss. I'm looking at this beautiful child in this beautiful situation, and I'm seeing loss. And I'm thinking, oh, poor guy, I feel so bad for you. He hasn't changed. His situation has not changed. He is not a different person. Nothing terrible has happened to him. It may be that his little, body is having distress, but it doesn't change who he is and what he is. Because if you're looking at the world and you're seeing it as it truly is, then you can't be distressed about it because you see that it's all perfect and joyful. But if you're looking at it and you're seeing it in this other way through the ego's eyes, then you're going to see, now even when you see him laughing, you're going to think, oh yeah, but he was crying last night, or oh yeah, but he's going to, worst case scenario, which is all of our lives, he will grow up, have his life. He will have joys and suffer, and all these things will happen, and then he will die. And in the end, that's the only thing that you can look forward to in this world is death. And so the world that Jesus is talking to us here about is a world of death and the inevitability of extreme loss and no joy. And he's pointing out to us, this is the world I'm choosing to see. I say we very loosely. I don't know if everybody sees the world that way, but I don't want to offend people, but I can definitely say I see it that way. So my experience I'm worried about, all the inevitability of loss and pain and suffering in the world. And how can you be joyful? How can you be joyful when every joyful thought you have is tinged by this sorrow? So he says, I'm going to read that first line again, since I've gotten long away from it. The world you see holds nothing that you need to offer you, nothing that you can use in any way, nor anything at all that serves to give you joy. Believe this thought, and you are saved from years of misery, from countless disappointments, and from hopes that turn to bitter ashes of despair. No one but must accept this thought as true if he would leave the world behind and soar beyond its petty scope and little ways. And so he's saying, if you just accept that this world is not what you think it is, that this world is just a veil of tears, bitter ashes of despair, you know, just accept that and recognize that it is not what I want. There is nothing in this world that is that I can value that is valuable.
Yeah, yeah. It's somehow, as you were saying that, Lynn, I had several images. It's sort of the astronomical, you know, the physics perspective of zooming in and out from a, you know, from a galactic, you know, pan-galactic perspective, all the way down through. You know, I'm sure most people have seen those movies like The Power of Ten and some of those animations that show, you know, if you take a person and then you zoom out. And then you see that they're actually on a beach blanket, lying in a big grassy field in a park, you know. And then another magnification goes out, and then you see that that's actually part of a larger neighborhood. And pretty soon you see that, you know, the outline of a lake, and then you realize, you know, okay, they're actually, you know, near this larger body of water. And then you keep zooming out, and then pretty soon you see the whole state that they're in, and the northern hemisphere, and then the whole planet, and then you see the moon, and then you see the other planets, and then pretty soon you see, you know, local stars like, you know, Alpha Centauri, and then you get down, you know, keep going, and then you see the Milky Way, and then you see galactic clusters, and then you see, you know, wow, this huge thing, and that's all that we with our science know of, and that's a pretty vast amount of space, which is mostly nothing, of course. Mostly empty space, and then they usually take the film, because we're in the middle, and then zoom it back to the perspective of a typical person's body, and then you keep zooming in, then you see, you know, organs and tissues and cells, and then pretty soon they usually use the DNA, and then just spiraling down into individual atoms and or molecules and atoms, and then finally to quarks and all the, you know, all the subatomic stuff, you know, right? But again, where's again mostly empty space. But there's nothing there. There's nothing that I want. and that cosmic perspective, I think, kind of reminds me of a favorite Dr. Seuss movie, is Horton Hears the Who. You know, it's like we're in this little tiny speck of dust that, you know, whether it's a spatial or a temporal metaphor, or just one that has to do with our individual selves being this tiny little fragment of the capital S selfhood that we all share, but we think that the little S self, the little I that holds, you know, something, we think we hold something, that has something to offer us, and yet if we see it in the grander perspective, it's just like the little Horton looking at the little Whoville folks that, you know, that are on a speck of dust, and that's their whole planet, you know, but we we forget that context so often because we want to forget it. We went out of our way to make up an incredibly amazing high production hologram that is so convincing, and we have all the sensory data that seems to confirm it, and the science, including all the you know, macroscopic and microscopic stuff I was just talking about, that seems to validate a world that, you know, it, by comparison to what we really are, doesn't even exist, which is the amazing part, I think, of what the A Course in Miracles and a lot of other pure non-dual traditions suggest, is that the reality that is beyond that, if that is what we want. But we have to look at what we don't want first, and that's really, it's not saying, like you were talking about earlier, Linda, it's not, you know, the joy of seeing your grandkid doing fun stuff or a sunset or a, you know, dessert you like, or just, you know, having fun with friends or whatever. It's not that, because those things are in the mind also. But it's really just seeing that we attach an appendage, the specifics to that happiness or that peace or joy, and realizing, no, it has nothing to do with the specific. That can be a triggering event. But the choice is always in the mind, and of course brings us, you know, gently but firmly and inexorably back to the mind, where we do have a choice, and we do have an opportunity to choose something that we do want. So, shall I read the next paragraph?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Let me just read the last sentence of the previous paragraph because I think it ties together. No one but must accept this thought as true. If he would leave the world, the ego's world, behind and soar up beyond its petty scope in little ways. Each thing you value here is but a chain that binds you to the world. And there's that major word value, which is our investment, right? And it will serve no other end but this. And as long as we invest our identity in thinking that there's specifics in the world that make us happy or sad, whether it's an attachment or an aversion, to use more Eastern terms, if you will, it's the same outcome, isn't it? Then we're at the mercy of, instead of being merciful to, ourselves and everyone else. For everything must serve the purpose you have given it until you see a different purpose there. The only purpose worthy of your mind this world contains is that you pass it by without delaying to perceive some hope where there is none. And that reminds me of one of the, in Gary Renard's second book, Your Immortal Reality, he has a chapter on the corrected sayings of Thomas. And one of them that's very short, very memorable, and very easy to apply when we remember it to be mindful is be passersby. You know, just, if we can just kind of look at our little Whoville world as just a fleeting circus of by default meaningless stuff, but we can find the meaning in it, in the connection. We can find, as you talked about right at the beginning of this conversation, Lynn, you know, our true relationships, our true conversations, our true openness to seeing the inner connection and beyond that to the oneness, but that's where we need to start, is the sameness, because that's what we can relate to in this world. And when we see the sameness, then we can pass by the seeming differences and the divisiveness and the conflict that is the corrupt heart of the non-existent ego that we've so invested in. So then it says, be you deceived no more. The world you see holds nothing that you want. Recapitulated. So, a lot there, huh?
Absolutely, it's you know, so amazing to me as we look at these things and as we examine our use of the world and the chains that bind you to the world. Each thing you value is a chain, and it serves no other end but this. I mean, holy cow, what is it that I value then? Let's see. I'm screwing something up here. Do I value my grandson and his life? Then if something happens to him, I'm going to be devastated. Do I value my job? If something happens to that, I'm going to be devastated. Do I value my health, my body, look at the things that you value and recognize, you know, Jesus is saying, this is what's keeping you here. Mm-hmm. And it will not do anything else. So, why is it? Because I'm giving it the purpose of keeping me here. I'm, that's what I made it for. I made this body, I made this world so that I could play this game. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, that's the reason. I made it so I could play this game, so I could do this thing, so I could have this experience. And as I am, hang on just a second. As I'm doing that, I am tying myself to it so that it seems like I cannot ever break loose. And if you've been doing serious work of trying to break loose of the ego, then you see how its little tentacles are in everything. It's in every single thing. It doesn't matter what it is that you see, do, think. It is just rampant there. And so this, the only purpose worthy of your mind this world contains is that you pass it by.
Right, right.
Just pass it by.
Exactly, exactly. And I think there's sort of a cautionary note that I think might be helpful to remember, and particularly with lessons like these, is the ease and the temptation that is dangled in front of us. It's very seductive that the non-existent self that is the ego would like to foster, which is the idea of nihilism. And I just looked it up. I did a quick Google on the word. And,
nihilism, yeah.
But I think that's such a common thing. And then it ties into, I won't mention the name of the person, but there's a person in our Wednesday night online study group that, you know, brought this up and said, well, if you recognize there's nothing here that you want, and she didn't use those words exactly, but that was the gist of it. So why would you want to stay here? You know, why wouldn't you offer yourself? And then it leads to you know, in extreme cases, suicidal tendencies or whatever. Because if you think that you've completely abandoned everything here, well, that's not what the Course is suggesting, because it's never suggesting behavior. But that's the conclusion that the ego uses as a smokescreen to keep us from looking at the mind, because it says, oh, if you do that, then you're gonna get paranoid and suicidal and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to just read why this doesn't work by reading the definition of nihilism. And it says, the rejection of all religious and moral principles, often in the belief that life is meaningless. Synonyms is skepticism, negativity, cynicism, and pessimism. And then it says, under philosophy, extreme skepticism, maintaining that nothing in the world has a real existence. Well, nothing in the world of the ego has a real existence. But the beauty of Course in Miracles is that not only does it ask us gently to examine, to just look at the insanity of the ego, but it also, by doing that, gives us an opportunity, because that brings us to the threshold where we can go beyond the veil of the dream and see that just past that, the next lesson is that beyond this world, there is a world that I want. And that's why these two lessons are important to do together. So maybe we can get to the second one. If we read,
I don't know about that.
I don't know. Or maybe next or something. But for anybody who's listening to this, you know, it's I think it's very important to make sure you do both lessons, because it even if it's just metaphorically, you know, reminding us that beyond, after we look at the stark desolation of the ego's thought system, which is basically the idea that we are powerless and we have no option, but we have all these false options in the world, which are all just illusion A, illusion B, illusion C, and even though they look different, they're really the same. So if the ego says, well, you don't want to look at the idea that none of those are real, because then there's no other alternative. Well, the Course says there is a real alternative. In fact, I think it's the fourth section in the last chapter of the text, you know, the real alternative shows us, you know, that there really is. And that's the beauty that's behind the kindnesses and the joyousness that we feel when we release our separate interest and jump back to the reality of the shared interest and seeing that we're all the same, and the kindness and the loving kindness and kindheartedness that happens from that is a direct result of choosing against the ego and being willing to go beyond that to seeing the tremendous beauty in every moment disguised as specifics, because at that moment we really have transcended. We're outside of space and time. We are reunited through that communication that you talked about, Lynn, to the capital S self that we all share, that does have complete meaning. It instead of ego's totally zero meaning, you know, meaningfulness, it's totally meaningless. We jump to the thought system that is 100% meaningful, and that includes everyone and everything. And it's meaningful because it does include everyone and everything. Yeah,
exactly. And that discussion about the nihilism, that, you know, that what nihilism actually is believing the world is true, mm-hmm. and saying that it's meaningless, mm-hmm. that it has no meaning.
Right, right.
It first gives the world reality.
Right.
This is the difference. We're not being asked to give the world reality or to see any part of it as being real.
Mm-hmm.
We're being asked to see that it is totally unreal.
Exactly.
And therefore, to commit suicide because of it is just saying, right. "Yep, it's real, and I'm getting out of here." Where are you going to go from there? You're going to go right back to a real world. You're going to not a real world, but you're going to go right back to the same dream, the same mistake over and over and over. You can't get out of here by death. Death is not the way out of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus does say that as well. You know, death is not the way out. The only way out is through forgiveness.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I've been seeing a lot, you know, of course we study a lot of these different teachers, and, you know, they pretty much are saying the same thing. But I don't think a lot of people recognize that when, like, Nisargadatta says, you know, look only at the I am. Look only at the I am, and everything else is not. And how does that happen? Because you look at it, recognize it's not real, never happened. That's forgiveness. You know, they're teaching the same exact thing. They're just giving it a different name. And so practicing forgiveness is really the only way out of this and all worlds, any world that we might invent, because it's saying, I made it up. It's not true. And it's not what God made. It has nothing to do with God. So the world you see holds nothing that you want. Escape today the change you place upon your mind when you perceive salvation here. When you look at this and say, this is what I need. For what you value, you make part of you as you perceive yourself. All things you seek to make your value greater in your sight limit you further. Hide your worth from you and add another bar across the door that leads to true awareness of yourself. So what are these things that we're seeking to make our value in our own sight better? You know, is it a college degree? Is it a becoming an ordained minister? Is it becoming a parent? Becoming a driver? Becoming a swimsuit model? You know, what is it that we're doing?
That one hadn't even crossed my mind. Yeah, but I think it's fun to realize that we can laugh at all of them gently, not in any kind of derisive way, but in a kind-hearted way. That when we really look at the crazy things we do, it's just like watching a silly cartoon, isn't it? I mean, it's really like seeing the insanity of thinking that some specific thing in a dream on the screen of our mind is going to restore happiness to a self that in truth has been eternally happy, but has been dreaming because of a crazy idea that we entertained for just a moment, but then we made an incredible big deal out of, that became the whole universe of space and time. And because of that insane notion, we think that we're able to abandon that incredible, unimaginably wonderful happiness that is still in effect, because ideas don't leave their source, and that the true idea that we really are, like you say, you know, Nisargadatta's use of the word, the phrase I am, is really a reminder that the I am, the perfect oneness, the perfect peace that we all are and all share, has never been threatened. You know, nothing real can be threatened, and that's the reality that the Course, right off the bat, puts in our face and says, I think you might have forgotten something here. and then it goes on with 1,300 pages to elaborate on that same idea, but it's basically that what we really are couldn't possibly be threatened. That oneness, that ecstatic beyond our imagination to comprehend it, and we just get little glimmers and glimpses of it, that awareness is unthreatened, undamaged, untainted, uncorruptible, and unaffected by anything that we've done in this massive dream. And we can, but the best part is we get to use at our own pace every little scrap and shred of this dreamlike existence as our classroom to get us back to the mind to where we remember that.
Yes.
Woohoo!
And sometimes the using of that can elicit some sort of pain that's not really painful, but we perceive it as such.
Right.
Because we have to let it go. And, you know, there's so many things if you look around you don't even have to look around, just look in your own mind as to anything that distresses you, that is upsetting you at this very moment. Of course, right now, nothing is upsetting me at this very moment because I'm here with you now. But when I'm, when I'm on my own and I'm not here, then I start seeing all, perceiving all sorts of things that upset me. You know, I can look in the mirror and be upset. I can look out the window and be upset. I can, look in my own mind at my thoughts and be upset. So basically everything is upsetting me. Why? Because I'm seeing something that doesn't exist. That's one of the very earliest lessons that we have, is that, you know, I'm upset because I'm seeing a world that's not real. And, and, you know, here he's telling us why. Why yep. is it upsetting to see a world that's not real? And what is it costing me to continue to do that? So you want to read the next paragraph?
I think it's your turn if we're taking turns.
Okay.
not that it makes any difference.
All right. Okay. So let nothing that relates to body thoughts delay your progress to salvation, nor permit temptation to believe the world holds anything you want to hold you back. Nothing is here to cherish. Nothing is here to cherish. Nothing is here to cherish. nothing here is worth one instant of delay and pain, one moment of uncertainty and doubt. The worthless offer nothing. Certainty of worth cannot be found in worthlessness. Worthless and nothing.
And again, he's not defined. Yeah, I think it's important, again, tied to that discussion of nihilism, however you pronounce it, is that the awareness that's being talked about is not the self, the capital S self that we really are. It's not, you know, seeing all of spirit in everyone. It's when we see less than all of spirit in everyone. That's where we believe that there's a specific that we could be tied to, whether it's a personality or a body or anything less than perfect oneness is not worthy of us, as the Course eloquently states. You know, anything that's less than complete peace that is not subject to any change and that is completely eternal is worthy of us. You know, we're worthy of the unchanging eternal joy that is our birthright and that awaits us beyond the threshold of being willing to look at the unworthiness of the ephemeral. Yeah. So then it continues. Today we practice letting go of all thought of values we have given to the world. We leave it free of purposes we gave its aspects and its phases and its dreams. I like how those are put together because the dreams are only of things that are separate. I mean, beyond the dreams is oneness, right? So we hold it purposeless within our minds and loosen it from all we wish it were. And, of course, uses the word wish to distinguish from will, because the will of the perfection of what we are is already accomplished. So there's no effort involved in that. It's just an allowing ourselves to remember what's been all there throughout eternity. But the only thing that could seem to cover that is a wish for it to be different. Then it goes on, thus do we lift the chains that bar the door to freedom from the world and go beyond all little values and diminished goals. And what could be more diminished than a goal that is to achieve something that is at the expense of someone else or that doesn't include a joy that couldn't possibly be changed or modified or diminished. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's real cool. So we're going to practice that today.
Exactly.
So he just says, you know, pause and be still a while and see how far you rise above the world. Wow. Just pause and be still a while and see how far you rise above the world when you release your mind from chains and let it seek the level where it finds itself at home. So, you know, he's really saying, you know, stop a minute. Just, you know, do this now even. And just first off, look at everything that you value and you're giving value to and how it is all basically artificial. And just release your mind from the chains of it. Let go of it and let it seek the level where it finds itself at home. It will be grateful to be free a while. He's talking about your mind. It will be grateful to be free a while. It knows where it belongs. But free its wings and let it fly in sureness and in joy to join its holy purpose. Let it rest in its creator, there to be restored to sanity, to freedom, and to love. So he's talking about releasing the mind by releasing the chains that bind it to the world. And when you do that and do that either through, even though the Course doesn't say meditate, it doesn't even say, I think maybe once or twice it might say the word, I'm not sure. But really that's what it is it's meditating, it's contemplating, it's you know, really taking the time to generalize this stuff into your life, mm-hmm. by just asking yourself the question, how does this pertain to, you know, whatever I'm doing right now, you know, how is what I'm doing right now making more chains to bind me to the world, and how can I release myself from this so that, you know, at least the ones I'm building now are going to be released. And as I'm doing that, it does change the way I feel and see things, and the amount of happiness that I have. I'm intensely happy. You know, that is the great gift of this course is I am intensely happy, and I'm intensely happy all the time, even when things are going really bad and I'm seeing things going to hell around me. I'm still just like looking at it with wonder wow, can you believe this is what seems to be happening now? You know, even it's actually kind of comical. You know, when you start looking at it from the other side, because you see how completely absurd it all is.
Very comical. Exactly. It is absurd, yeah. But it doesn't have to be any kind of mean-spirited, you know, laughter. It's just a gentle laughter that we say, oh, yeah, I was, you know, in those moments where there seemed to be a lapse in that awareness, I was just investing in something that doesn't serve me. I was just, you know, pulling into a little cul-de-sac where I was just spinning my wheels, and then all I have to do is just turn the thing around and get back on the main thoroughfare, and that's really, you know, all we do. So
exactly. So I know, and Christina in the room says vigilance for God and kingdom. And
yeah,
that's what it is. You're being vigilant only for God and His kingdom.
That's it.
You're
that's
not
it.
Being vigilant for the world.
Yeah, and I think the way we apply that, as you were talking a moment ago, Lynn, I was you know, momentarily thinking about, you know, wrapping our conversation up, and it's like all the things that I anticipate doing today, which is working on a few websites, making a quick grocery run, talking to my spouse and my mother and probably a bunch of other people, and, you know, going for a walk and maybe getting a little siesta. But I was thinking, all those things I can do with a mindfulness that is, why am I doing what I'm doing? What do I expect to get out of each of those activities? And I think we can apply this. And it's because it's a very practical course. And that's why it gives us exercises to be mindful, because we can afford from that perspective to be gently mindful of how much we resist doing that and seeing where that doesn't serve us, and not to beat ourselves up when we discover we've had you know, the better part of a day of being off on our own tangent, so to speak, doing all the things that we think that are going to make us happy in the world. But after a certain amount of practice, we get to the point where we can see how we can mindfully integrate. We can chew gum and walk, so to speak. We can look at the things that we're doing in our lives while we're doing them and be mindful of the idea that we can choose a different purpose for everything that we do, and that is simultaneously to, you know, not modify our behavior for the sake of modification, but to do pretty much the things we would have done anyway, but with a peaceful attitude where we realize with a gentle inner smile that whatever I'm doing is not bringing me happiness because my happiness is independent of that. And that's the world beyond what we see that does hold what we want. So let me finish this last couple of paragraphs here, or I'll read the second to last one. Give it 10 minutes rest three times today. And when your eyes are opened afterwards, you will not value anything you see as much as when you looked at it before. Your whole perspective on the world will shift by just a little every time you let your mind escape its chains. The world is not where it belongs. Where did I misplace that thing? And you belong where it would be and where it comes to rest when you release it from the world. Wow, release it from the world. That, what a great phrase. Your guide is sure. Another great phrase. Open your mind to him. Be still and rest. Wow. You want to finish the last paragraph?
Yeah. And I the last paragraph, the first line in the last paragraph is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says, protect your mind throughout the day as well. See, he's given us something that is the protective shield of the atonement, basically,
mm-hmm.
is you know, keeping us from falling down the well.
Yeah,
you know, keeping us from falling down the hole again.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to be protected. And so, you know, if you're looking at it as, well, what I'm doing is, you know, I'm doing it for me because, you know, I want to awaken. I'm doing it for the world because I want to make the world a better place. I'm doing it for my children so that, you know, they can have a calm and loving mother. You know, here's all the reason I think I'm doing it. And, really what I'm doing is protecting my own mind by right-minded thinking.
Yeah.
It has no other benefit. And well, it might have other benefits. I'm sure it does make the world a better place. I'm sure it does make me a calmer person. I'm sure
mm-hmm,
that it
mm-hmm.
does make me, all those things are byproduct benefits. But
right.
the reality of what it is protecting my mind from the insanity that I impose on myself.
Bingo. Exactly.
So I'll just finish reading this. So protect your mind throughout the day as well. And when you think you see some value in an aspect or an image of the world, refuse to lay this chain upon your mind, but tell yourself with quiet certainty, this will not tempt me to delay myself. The world I see holds nothing that I want. And so that's I'm not sure about the language. I don't use this language. When I'm looking at a piece of chocolate cake, I don't say, this will not tempt me to delay myself. The world I see holds nothing that I want. You know, I say, wow, you know, I would rather have a piece of chocolate cake than salvation. No. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I think that could be a whole conversation right there, is the notion of temptation, because that really implies that there's value in the world, you know. That, but that's really, I think, what the Course is asking us to look at, is to see that the value is in the mind and it's not in the specific, and that's what we can enjoy the specific, and that's. That enjoyment is independent of when we're in our right minds, of whether or not we do or don't do, you know, specific things, you know, whether it's a piece of chocolate cake or a career choice or, you know, choosing who we live with or relate to or, you know, our, you know, health, financial, any regimens, you know, that all that stuff, it's all independent of that. It basically is saying that we can afford to be at peace no matter what, and that awareness is the world that we do want. Once we tap into that, like you say, Glenn, you know, we can be peaceful throughout the day, and the more we choose that peace, the more we reinforce that thought system and discover that is the world we want, and that the idea that we would be limited to a specific thing, because, you know, if it was chocolate cake that gave us happiness, then we would have to be ingesting that 24/7, 365, and that's not terribly practical, right?
We are not going to like chocolate cake after a while.
Yeah, and exactly. And you might gag a bit at some point, you know, on that whole lifestyle, you know. But
yeah, have you ever been on when I used to work for a when I was a very young, I worked for a mental health center as a therapist, and we had a place where we took in kids, and kids would all different kinds of things, and drugs, alcohol, parental abuse, all this kind of stuff. And so the first time I went in there for an interview, I walked in and there was this big table, and on this big table there were just like a dozen cakes, those like big cakes in the boxes, like came from Albertsons, right? So all these cakes are on the table, and I'm like, what is going on? Is it somebody's birthday or something? And they're like, no, you know, they donate this stuff. And really, we did. We got tons of donations of all sorts of food items. But when a cake was too old to sell, like a couple days old, they would donate it. And so I was like, wow, this is really cool cake every day. Because in my body, this body likes to be a little fatty. So I'm like, oh, cool, you know, cake every day. But you know what? Cake every day, especially if you're eating it two or three times a day because you're hungry and there's nothing else to eat, is not the most pleasant thing ever. And, you know, there's certain kinds of frosting that just taste like lard and sugar. You know, it's, I mean, you really begin to, you know, discern that this is not what I want to eat all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And, and so, fortunately... I didn't let that image become a chain upon my mind. Anyway, thank you so much, Bruce Rawls.
Thank you, Lynn. Yeah.
So much appreciate you. Have so
likewise,
much fun.
Likewise. And we'll be back next week and talk about something related.
Something else that'll be up and it'll be just as cool. So, all right, Bruce Rawls, thank you so much. And talk to you next week. And I was wondering if you were going to try to come in through Pal Talk today.
I appreciate you sending me that app, and it does seem to work, which is great. So thanks. I'll probably start putting that on my other machine so I can at least see the conversation streaming by and have my audio turned out on that one. So
very cool. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Bruce. And yeah, I just appreciate that they finally got something for people.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Exactly.
So, all righty. Well, we'll talk to you next week, and I love you, Bruce.
Likewise. A good... Likewise to all.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great week. Bye.